You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate today. Charles Yu's new collection of stories looks at the way technology can make it easier to connect with other people, while at the same time paradoxically making it lonelier. Titled Sorry, Please, Thank You, it follows the author's very successful debut novel, How to Live Safely in a Science Fictional Universe, which was named a New York Times Notable Book of the Year. It's published by Pantheon, and I'm pleased to welcome Charles Yu to the Leonard Lopate Show. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Elliot.
The first story in the collection is called Standard Loneliness Package, and it's about a call center in Bangalore,
right,
which people are allowed to outsource their pain.
Right.
How does that work?
Pain, boredom, anything they really don't want to go through the trouble of having to experience in their own life. So it works that in this near future world, you can call up your broker, and if you've got, a root canal coming up, you can just, let them know the appointed time. And at that time, your consciousness, they have a consciousness transfer protocol, and your brain will switch you into some kind of mental waiting room where you get to read a magazine and have a drink, and someone in India will feel your pain for you, basically.
I love that idea. I can't wait for that to really happen. You must have had fun trying to figure out the amounts. I think if I've got this right, root canal costs you $150. A migraine is actually more expensive,
right,
at $200, but if you have a death of a cousin, that's a whopping $500.
Right.
The motto is don't feel like having a bad day. Let someone else have it for you.
Right. Yes. And I did take some time to calibrate the amounts. They had to feel right. I mean, you don't want to get them wrong and make people think that you don't understand pain yourself, right?
Is there any sort of pain that people could never really afford?
In the story, goes to some dark places, and one that's talked about is death of a child is obviously a sort of specially negotiated thing, but other than that, they have a rate card that covers most situations in life and takes place in a society where if you have enough money, you don't really have to deal with things you don't want to deal with anymore.
How did you come up with this idea? When did it hit you that you could outsource your pain?
Well, I am I have a day job, and I am a lawyer by day, and I spend my time, I work in-house at a company now, but I have worked at a law firm in the past, and when you bill by the hour, your day is chopped up into time units, and you spend a lot of time thinking about other people's problems. It's not much of a leap, I guess, to think about what if we had some technology to be able to literally, deal with someone else's problems.
Clearly, people outsource the lawsuits, the divorces, and the wills with you. It was a small leap to make this happen.
Right.
So what about those people who actually carry out that pain? What do they get paid?
They get paid $12 an hour. So, yes, we've got a sort of that's the reality of the economy, I think, and probably not that different from how it works in the real world.
There's a pain and equity gap here.
That's right. There is.
So can the people who actually feel other people's pain ever afford to outsource their own pain?
They can't usually. The best they can hope for is that the bits of an outsourced life always contain, say you're having a root canal. Part of it is you're also waiting in the waiting room, for instance, for a while, maybe just relaxing and reading a magazine. So there are parts of even a bad part of your life that aren't terrible. And those bits can get extracted out and smushed into what's called in the story a reconstituted secondhand life. And so what the workers in this economy are kind of aiming for at best is to buy themselves a kind of prepackaged life made up of bits of other people's lives.
Your work has been compared to Kurt Vonnegut and Douglas Adams, among others. Are you comfortable with that?
Absolutely not. I'm not comfortable at all with that.
Is it a high bar, or is it just a totally different writing style?
Oh, no, it's just a ridiculously high bar. I mean, of course, it's flattering, especially when the comparisons are coming from someone other than myself. No, I'm just kidding. I it's amazing to hear that some of the comparisons, and those are people I read and still read, so it's amazing.
And where do you focus your stories? Is it on the ideas first, or technology, or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. it's usually starts with the kind of kernel, like with standard loneliness package. So just have this, a phrase even, just, you know, this idea of root canal being 150 and thinking of what if, you know, life was, had gotten to that point where things were just so commodified that even pain itself could be a commodity. And that will drive the writing of the story.
Another story is narrated by a worker on the graveyard shift at World Mart, the biggest store in the human world, it's called. You'd seem to choose, there seems to be a theme about people in dead-end jobs. Why is that?
I think, you know, I like reading fiction about work, the workplace. I think work is a huge part of, you know, well, it's the biggest part of most people's day, actually, by sort of hourly, you know, in terms of how you spend your hours. And yet I think it's a little bit underrepresented in fiction itself. And it's such a, and even probably compared to just, you know, 20, 30 years ago, people spent so much more time at work that, and I spent a lot of my time at work. So I you know, the workplace and the kinds of jobs we have now, I think especially with how technology can make certain kinds of jobs that didn't exist very long ago. And I think that's those are sort of interesting things for me to explore in my stories.
I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate. And my guest is Charles Yu. He has a new collection of short stories called Sorry, Please, Thank You. Tell us about the title story.
So the title story is actually a story I wrote on a napkin. Esquire magazine did a project called the Napkin Fiction Project, and they sent napkins out to I think like a couple hundred fiction writers and asked them to actually write longhand a story and send it back to them. And they put them up on the website. And I wrote the entirety of that story onto a napkin and sent back to them, and it's on the website. And so in thinking about putting this collection together, I think it sort of came together as a unifying theme sort of for the collection.
Will you read a part of that title story for us?
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay, great. Any setup we need, or are you just going to jump right into it?
Well, this is a suicide note written on a cocktail napkin left in a bar.
So you wrote a story on a cocktail napkin about a cocktail napkin.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm with you. Go ahead. This is Charles Yu from his new book, Sorry, Please, Thank You.
You're reading this, so it's too late. For me, I mean, I'm gone. That's redundant, isn't it? What the hell am I doing? Only so much space on this napkin, and I'm using it up on rhetorical questions. What a metaphor for life, a finite space, impossibly small. No way to fit a whole lifetime in there, but we sure do try. Oh God, I'm annoying. I even annoy myself. I'm out of control with this kind of stuff, I know. That's why you never really loved me. Got one bullet in the chamber, barrel jammed in waistband, metal cold against my skin. One bullet, one napkin. Napkin that my last drink was sitting on. Running out of space, so I'll start to get to the point. You said I'd get over it. Should have made you a bet, because, hey, guess what? Got a loaded gun in my underwear, so it turns out I was right. Not that I can complain. Had some good years. My life in a nutshell. 0 to 8 years. Happy. No reason. 9 to 19. Happy. Wrong reasons. 20 to 33. Unhappy for all the right reasons. 34 to present moment. Unhappy. Looking for a reason. Sorry, man. I get that a lot. I'm sorry for your loss. People say to one another, but what does that mean? I wish it weren't so. I can imagine a world in which it had not happened. But that's not what sorry means. Sorry means that happened to you. That happened to you, and it may or may not have been inevitable. But it happened, and there are some things that happen we can only look at and say, sorry. It's circular. Sorry for your loss means I am sorry that there is loss. Or to put it another way, there is loss.
Charles Yu, reading from his new book, Sorry, Please, Thank You, the title story from this new collection. One story in the collection is narrated by a character in a computer game.
Right.
Tell us about that.
So, yeah, that story is called Hero Absorbs Major Damage, and it's written from the point of view of the leader of a group of warriors who are navigating an environment that you come to realize is something like the World of Warcraft, or one of these online role-playing games that, you know, that are played by millions of people around the world and so, you know, this is a fictional environment, really, that people spend hours of their life in. large percentages of their life in. And it's something that didn't exist 15, 20 years ago, really. And it's just interesting to me to think about what that does to your sort of conception of yourself, your physical body, your life, and what it means and what you want to achieve when, you know, when there are these kinds of virtual environments that take you to a place that, you know, that that's a different form of existence, really, that sort of you couldn't have had 20, 30 years ago.
I have a 17-year-old son, and I see how much time he takes in these games. And, of course, he laughs at the computer games we had, you know, 15, 20 years ago, which seemed so clunky. What is it about these alternate worlds that particularly draw young boys, do you think?
I don't know. I have a 3-year-old son, and I already watch the way he plays and how it's different from my 4-year-old daughter. And he is so into his playing. You know, he does voices already. He does. He is the character. My daughter is a narrator and an editor. She'll like tell me what parts of my story suck when I'm telling her. she'll demand stories from me, and then she'll tell me how bad that story is. My son doesn't care. He's just the character. He does, you know, monster voices, and he looks at me and he just expects me to be playing along. And I think there's something about, you know, to go back to that story, first person shooter, I think there's something about the first person nature of these games that, you know, draws you in a way that's so immersive, that it's a form of, you know, being a fictional character, really.
You have another story told from the point of view of a minor character in a Star Trek episode. Did you watch that show a lot when you were younger?
I did. I watched the reruns when I was younger, and then I watched The Next Generation when that was on as well. So, I mean, I wouldn't, I guess, describe myself as a hardcore Trekkie, but or a Trekker, but I'm a fan.
And you identified with the anonymous crew member.
Right. Right. The red shirt. Again, a dead-end job, literally in this case, because it's not spoiling it too much.
There's always one that – this is like Galaxy Quest, right?
That's right.
It's a Crewman 6 played by Sam Rockwell, right?
Exactly.
He's self-aware that he's the one that's expendable.
Yes.
What is it about that role that attracted you that's also been, you know, dealt with in other movies?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's the sort of absurdity of that job and the fact that jobs have some – a lot of jobs have some element of absurdity to them. You know, that – I wanted to think of the bridge of a starship, you know, in the same place as a workplace. You know, that's a workplace with bosses and with HR and with a cafeteria, it just attracted me as a kind of fun way to explore that kind of world.
There's another story called Adult Contemporary, in which a condo sale turns out to be something entirely different. Talk about that.
Yes. Yeah, so this is a kind of a story inspired by some of these really elaborate and beautiful sort of condo communities, especially in Orange County. I'm from LA, and in Orange County, there are some of these themed sort of living experiences where, you know, you kind of, it's called like the villa at the park or something. And you're buying real estate, but it also feels like you're kind of entering an adult Disneyland in a way that you know, even like the bathrooms kind of have a theme, and you know, there's a lot of theming going on, especially in Orange County. That's where Disneyland is. And
makes sense.
I was interested in the idea of a themed life in corporations that are getting so good at kind of, again, wrapping up life into a kind of story, a kind of prepackaged narrative, and taking that to an extreme and exploring it in that story.
Many of the stories that you write, even the set in the future or inside a computer game, they're still about relationships at the heart of it, so maybe trying to get the girl. Is that to humanize and to really bring it back to reality, something that we can all relate to?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to what you asked in the beginning. A lot of my stories start with ideas, and then I think, oh, I have to put people in this. So I go and I try to put people in it, and that's when the story really starts to click, if it is going to click for me. Is when I find a way to humanize it, like you're saying.
Expand a little bit on some of the themes. It seems to be identity is a big theme you write about. Talk about that.
I think it's identity and how it might be getting changed for better or for worse by new technologies. I think that's what's really interesting to me, and is how do we think about our stories, our lives as stories more, you know, more and more with the rise of, you know, the ability to spend time in a place that isn't physical, like, say, in a video game or an online, you know, chat room.
For instance, all the social media that seems to be coming up.
Right. I mean, more and more your identity, where you might physically locate that, gets harder to pinpoint. You know, if you spend a lot of time online, you may not be thinking as much about the room you're physically in, the chair you're sitting in. And what does that do, that kind of dislocation that, and that decoupling of your physical body with your non-physical self, I guess.
I remember turning to my son about, you know, 8 hours into a video game session he was in. And went, you know, in my day, we used to just go outside. Nobody goes outside anymore. You write a lot of poetry, or have, and in these stories you play with form and fonts in different sizes. Sometimes there's just a single sentence on a page. What's that about?
That is about a little bit about the look of the stuff on a page and using the kind of the dimensions of the piece of paper in a visual way. You know, there's one story in there that's about a character who wakes up every day in a different universe. And in a way, you know, so there's that story. There are pages that only have a single line of text, and it's sort of a representation, I think, of how it feels sometimes when you wake up in a day that you know, it sort of feels like isolated from where you might physically feel isolated, or just you feel like you're a little bit on an island of time.
I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate. The guest is Charles Yu, whose new collection of fiction is called Sorry, Please, Thank You. Are you comfortable with science fiction? Is it speculative fiction? Do you bother with labels? What do you think about all that?
I like both labels. I think it's speculative fiction is probably, I mean, I'm comfortable with science fiction too. I'll take both. but it's not all science fiction. So yeah, some of it is more like what if, and isn't necessarily interested about in building out the entire world in the way maybe a hard sci-fi author is. It's more about kind of the softer, more human aspects of speculative technologies or speculative ideas about technology.
And a lot of writers, particularly sci-fi writers, will put things in the third person. You often write in the first person. Why is that?
I think that seems to be my sort of, you know, default key. That's where I know how to play for now. I mean, I would like to write stories in all kinds. I'd like to be able to write stories in all kinds of different, you know, perspectives. But for whatever reason, that's the most direct and immediate way for me to get into a story often.
Couldn't help but notice the play on your name. I mean, in the first person, it's you.
Right.
Which is your last name. I'm probably not the first person to figure that out. A lot of the stories concern people trying to figure out what their lives are about or how they should be living their life or their goals. I mean, I guess at the heart of it, it's always less about technology and certainly about the meaning of life we get from a lot of science fiction.
Yeah, and that's what I get from the science fiction that I loved and from fiction in general, is that it does come back to that. I mean, I think there's some great, interesting stories about really far out, you know, worlds that have nothing to do with ours, but to me, the stuff that's always the most interesting is the stuff that's near future, or even really, you know, the present, and how the future is already kind of here in the present.
Tell us about the story Inventory.
So yes, Inventory is that sort of story where there is a character named Charles Yu, and
it's you.
It's It is a guy named Charles Yu who wakes up every day in a different universe, and slowly he comes to realize, or sort of he reveals that he is a kind of thought experiment. He is what happens if Charles Yu, the real person, daydreams. So his existence is contingent on whatever Charles happens to be thinking about that day or that moment. And he has really no continuity to his life. He just is at the whim of some dude's imagination.
It's you within you within you.
Yes.
Mr. You. And the conversation, you're a working lawyer. Will you continue to do both, or will you give up your day job at some point?
I don't know. I'd like to be able to have a lot of time to write, but I do enjoy what I do, and I think it feeds my writing. But it's getting harder and harder, especially as the kids get older. So I'd like to keep all options open.
And the next book, and you can share what you're working on?
I'm working on a novel that is about a father and a daughter, told from the father's perspective, and it's a bit about metaphor and how crucial metaphor is to especially a child learning how to navigate the world. So it's about, it's not metafiction, but it's about storytelling.
I've been speaking with Charles Yu about his latest collection of short stories called Sorry, Please, Thank You. It's published by Pantheon, and Charles Yu will be reading and speaking with Anil Menon in a conversation moderated by Ed Park tomorrow night at the Asian American Writers Workshop. That's at 110 West 27th Street. Charles, pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Elliot.